Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another installment of the Greg DeMarco Show, although I am not Greg DeMarco, which may or may not be a good thing depending on your perspective, but for those of us in the chat room here, I'm not Greg DeMarco, I am Big Dave from the Attitude of Aggression Wrestling Podcast. Those of you affiliated or have listened to the Chair Shot Network have probably heard me a time or two, maybe somewhere in there. I am being joined tonight by two esteemed, magnificent colleagues. One of them, the wrestling realist, Patrick O'Dowd. Patrick, how are you doing?
I'm great and mildly excited to know that I will not be interrupted by sound bites for most of the night.
No, you won't unless Greg splices them in somewhere along the way. Now, and the other thing is,
well,
go ahead, Patrick.
Why you got to be giving him ideas, dude?
I know.
Like, what was that? What was that all about?
He doesn't need much to go on, does he? So, you know, I don't know what he's going to do. Also, we are being joined tonight by the one and only Miranda Morales, who is here to kind of keep us in line, Patrick, and make sure that we don't spend the entire hour talking about the MCU, whether Joker is worth seeing, DC, that sort of thing. Miranda, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, speaking of the Joker, the inmates are now running the asylum. This is our show now, I feel like.
Oh,
I mean, let's have some fun with it.
Co-host takeover?
Yeah.
Co-host takeover. I dig it. I love it.
The mutiny is afoot. That's we're taking over, baby. So
we're taking over.
We got a fun episode. We're going to try and do our best to fill in without our fearless leader tonight, but we are going to touch bases We're going to touch bases on two of the hot button topics that took place in the last few days. We're going to touch bases on the premiere of SmackDown on Fox Friday nights that took place from the Staples Center in Los Angeles, California. Yes, if you listen to my show, you already know I was there. So we will get some input and takes on a pretty eventful night in Los Angeles. And then we will talk Hell in a Cell, which has rapidly turned into one of the more controversial and some would say disappointing pay-per-views in recent memory. But it wasn't all bad, and we will talk about that as we go along. We've also got a little segment we're going to do at the end. We're going to talk about the draft coming up and maybe have Patrick and Miranda do some prognosticating and some role-playing as general managers of their respective brands as we get into that later on. But guys, let's talk SmackDown first. Your thoughts on the debut of SmackDown on Fox. I know there was a lot of stuff going on. What were the high points? What were the low points? Just in general, rather than try and break it down into bite-sized pieces, what did you guys think of it?
I think that they did exactly what they set out to do in making this show feel like a huge deal. The WWE literally brought out all the stops. And when you open a show with The Rock, you just know that you're in for what I thought was going to be a special night. I think this is going to be a recurring theme. I think it's a show that may be remembered not quite as fondly as it could have been because of the last segment of a show. It seemed like people walked out of SmackDown loving all of SmackDown. All I saw was good feedback. Then, like, that last segment happened, and people were like, but that sucked. And I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, they had a habit of that this week. I don't know.
It was weird.
Weird habit of everything going pretty, pretty, pretty good, and then the ending just falling off.
Crash and burn. People very angry on Friday and again on Sunday over the last, you know, last segments of both shows.
Yeah,
pissed off wrestling fans? Never.
Never.
No, life. I know.
Never.
So
lots, a little bit of rage, yes.
Yeah, let me get your guys' opinions on a few things that took place. First off, from me being there personally, the crowd in Los Angeles was red hot, white hot, dare I say, for this thing. That was a tremendous crowd. They were heavily invested in it from the very word go. There is some stuff at the end that got people upset. And we can talk about that from the perspective of somebody there in the stands as to what I witnessed. But first off, Baron Corbin being turned into a sexually transmitted disease. What did you guys think of that nice little play on words that The Rock and Becky Lynch did?
He should be honored. He should be honored that The Rock has now created a sexually transmitted disease name for him. I mean, that's what Baron Corbin's been good at as well. He's a really good foil. And so, I mean, to for Becky Lynch to have the rub in the ring, but also, I mean, in this odd way, Baron Corbin, I mean, yeah, he should be honored.
Well, I honest to God, the whole segment solidifies the fact that the WWE sees more in Baron Corbin than this particular podcast does.
than most podcasts, you know, do.
More, I mean, we literally have a segment called Baron Corbin Sucks. Clearly the WWE does not think so. That's why he continues to, you know, he gets to win the King of the Ring. That's why he gets to be, you know, tag team beat down by Becky Lynch and The Rock. And that's viewed as a big deal, because that means that you're a big deal, like at least in the eyes of the management.
Yeah. The Rock isn't going to waste any time on you if you don't have a future in this business. So, yeah, in a roundabout way, great, more ammunition for us, you right. know, more names to call him Baron Corbin and all of that. But in that, you know, side, as far as the business side and The Rock's involvement, I mean, yeah, he's going to keep being with the company. He's going places and yeah, it's happening.
I can't wait for how people treat Baron Corbin at his Hall of Fame induction. Like, and you guys are laughing, but like, that's the trajectory they're putting him on. Like, when you look at the way that they've treated him, once he got the haircut, he's a prominent part of this company and this show, and has been for a couple of years now. And so I think I got to get used to it. Because I think we're going to see him get inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame when he eventually retires.
Well, let's be honest. He was very good in this segment. I mean, he did what he was supposed to do, and he cut. He was, you know, he was eloquent on the mic. He did what he needed to do. He got in a few barbs with The Rock, and he took the verbal abuse quite well. And then he took the people's elbow even better, and he took a rock bottom. And yeah, I mean, that's getting put over in kind of a way that you don't normally associate with being put over. You know,
right.
But you know, that's one of those things. When you get your ass kicked by The Rock, it automatically puts you over. So it's a unique situation for Mr. Corbin. We had the four horsewomen got into a tag team match that was kind of similar to what we saw a couple weeks ago on Raw. Very similar result. Charlotte looking probably as strong as possible. Did it surprise you that she got a tap out victory? That, you know, Charlotte and Becky got the tap out, where Charlotte getting Bayley to tap. Did that catch you guys by surprise?
LOL, no. Charlotte wins.
It really didn't. I mean, this whole program between the four horsewomen, it's been pretty established that both Becky and Charlotte were going to become victorious after Hell in a Cell. They set that up well. And Charlotte is a star. You mentioned the draft earlier. We'll see where she ends up in the draft, but it is very possible that, you know, she remains on SmackDown. She, of course, as the champion, but also, I mean, it sounds like they're also going to revolve a lot of storyline and publicity around her, as they did for this buildup. So
is it possible that, can you guys see a scenario where Raw would draft the SmackDown Women's Champion or vice versa? I mean, I know it's all, you know, kind of planned out, but is that truly a possibility that you could foresee that they're going to do something like that?
Yeah, I do. If for no other reason, it'll get everybody talking about it. But I also think that people are really trying to think about how to describe this. Cause I think the way I'm going to do the segment at the end of the show is going to be very different than what, is actually going to happen on the show. There's all this speculation about who wants what out of Fox versus USA for the show, and like which personalities and talents they want to be a part of SmackDown versus, you know, who they're like, who USA wants at Raw. And the SmackDown Women's Champion is one of the names I've heard bandied about there. You know, Brock Lesnar is one of the names I've heard bandied about there. He's not a champion, but, you know, Bray Wyatt, like I'm actually legitimately intrigued by this draft, because I do think that it may actually carry some of that meaning that we're hearing the interwebs talk about like, you know, how much sway do the networks have in this? Do they have any role? Does it even matter? Because it seems like it's more than just, hey, we need to shake up our rosters like we always do. You know, whether that is we're done with the wild card rule and we need to fix it, or just that, you know, we know that we need to put something together that Fox and USA are both going to be mutually happy with moving forward. I think it'll be exciting.
Well, from leaving the realm of the four horsewomen, we got, I don't know if you guys want to really talk about Seth outsmarting himself and having the Fiend attack him once again. Oh, the Fiend's coming. I'm going to go to the top of the ramp. Well, he's behind you there, Seth, as well. I don't know if there's much to talk about. I think the ladder match had far more big-time ramifications. Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon, KO wins, Shane gets fired. Not particularly surprising, but I did want to ask you guys this. Now, I'd read online today in a couple places, sources that we usually criticize actually might have got something right. They were indicating Kevin Owens has been removed from the active roster on the WWE.com website, which I did confirm. You guys see anything of that? Is that a glitch? I can't imagine that they would put Kevin Owens over just for him to bail to AEW 3 days later. But, you know, your thoughts on the ladder match? I thought it was a very good ladder match. Crowd was definitely into this one. Nothing that we haven't really seen before. Very paint by the numbers as far as the spots they did, but it was still a great match. But your thoughts on KO winning, Shane getting fired? Is there any smoke to this Kevin Owens not being on the website situation?
That's a good question. I don't foresee him going to AEW. I don't know if they're going to pull what they did with Finn Balor last week and have him show up on NXT for a while. That's where my mind goes more automatically, or unless he's working through an injury, and this was a way to somewhat write off both characters. I'm just happy that the era of Shane McMahon is done. It was fun while it lasted, and by that I mean like the fun was like the first month, and then after that, like I was done with it. So I'm glad that we're all able to move on from, you know, Shane McMahon, best in the world. And it also sets a different tone for SmackDown. That was a big criticism about SmackDown for months, is these figureheads, these authority figures. Granted, who's going to do the draft? Who knows? There's no, you know, anonymous general managers anymore. There are no more general managers, so who knows? But I thought it was a really fun match to watch. And yeah, I'm glad Shane's gone.
I did just search the website and found Kevin Owens' profile on WWE.com. So you can at least still search him and bring him up. I didn't scroll through like the superstars like thumbnail pages, but yeah, we've got that. So we've still got a bio, but I'm not sure what else. Miranda, do you really think Shane McMahon's going to be gone for that long?
I mean, gone forever? No. But gone for a while, please. Like, I can't miss you if you don't leave.
That's true. I mean, the word has been going around for a while that he's been wanting some time off. So I think it does make a lot of sense that he lost. It was long overdue. He needed to take a break. We need a break from Shane McMahon. I'm happy I don't have to see him take a dumb bump. Like, and we've talked about this on the show many times. I don't like the bumps that Shane McMahon takes. And I get that it's his body, he has a choice to do with it. But every time I'm like, when he takes leaps off cells in front of his kids a la Mick Foley, I just don't like it. I don't like it. He's older than I am. And I'm like, somebody's going to break Shane. You know, I can't imagine that Kevin Owens is going anywhere else. I mean, maybe, but I didn't even know is his contract allegedly up? Like, I didn't even know that was a thing.
It just caught me by surprise. You know, when I was like, huh.
And I think if that were to happen, I think the WWE would be much, much stronger about their no compete clauses, as they tend to be. So even if he did leave, we wouldn't see him for like 30 days, 60 days, whatever it is that they 90 days. I can't remember what the number is. And I'm sure that if he left, they'd announce his release. Like, they just, that's what they do. Like, it's very rare that they just ignore that somebody's a free agent. Like, in somebody as high profile as Kevin Owens, like, there's no way.
Yeah. I figure it's got to be a glitch. But yeah, if you go in through the superstars and try and find him, I mean, everybody, even the lesser known guys in the NXT UK show up there, but Kevin Owens wasn't there. So I was like, hey, wait, that is kind of odd. But I did, like you, Patrick, I was able to search him and find his bios, which ironically enough were the Hell in a Cell match against Shane 2 years ago, which I don't know. I don't know what that means. But
what does it all mean?
Yeah, exactly. Going from there to, here's the thing about SmackDown on Fox. They wanted to present it as a more sports-based product. And I think that kind of shone through with the way the set was done and kind of just the way the graphics, everything was kind of flowing in a way that said, okay, this is Fox Sports going on here. And then in this first thing I want to talk about, which is Braun Strowman and Tyson Fury, they introduced the first non-WWE sports element to this thing in a very unexpected way with a guy that a lot of people, I was like, for a while, I was like, who is that? And it's like, oh, wait, okay, that's Tyson Fury. You know, these guys get into it a little bit, and then it, of course, all explodes in Bakersfield last night. But, you know, your thoughts about this segment and about Fox trying to inject, because we're going to see that in the main event, more injection of other sports into this WWE product. What do you guys think of that? They're clearly moving in that direction of trying to bring these other more traditional sports into the WWE pantheon of whatever's going on. What did you guys think of that whole thing?
So I get it. Like, I get the why. I don't really love the why, because as much as wrestling fans say that they want like a broader audience, we don't. We want our wrestling. We want our wrestlers. And we talk out of both sides of our mouth when it comes to what we actually want on a program. But if I'm, you know, a network television show, if I'm on, you know, on Fox, and I'm trying to bring in viewers and I'm trying to bring in people that may be there as a potential crossover, an athlete like Tyson Fury makes a lot of sense. It puts a different set of eyeballs. Eric Bischoff used to talk about this talks about this all the time on 83 Weeks. When he gets asked why they brought someone like a Karl Malone or a Dennis Rodman, or a Master P even, to be on the show and involved. And it's because they're trying to bring in other eyeballs. They're trying to, cross pollinate an audience. And so there's a similar demographic there. There's a dedicated fan base that is not part of that Venn diagram, where it overlaps, and they're trying to bring those people in and see if they'll stay. And so that's why you do that. And I'm not the person who cares about that, because they've already got me. I'm going to whine about it on the internet, like they do on Twitter or something, but I'm probably still going to tune in. I'm probably still going to watch. I rolled my eyes at the Pull Apart yesterday because I thought it was boring. But I know why they did it and why they're setting it up.
Yeah, it's
not for me.
It's almost like they weren't quite sure, hey, how hard can I hit you? That sort of thing last
night.
Like, they're like,
that is a great way to describe it.
They're like, can I really haul off and hit you? And then Tyson Fury, every punch he threw, you could see, okay, these are all missing. They look good, but they're all missing by a fair amount on just about everybody. Except maybe Cesaro. Cesaro at the end when he got hit. Okay, that looked almost real. But anyway, Miranda, what are your thoughts on this whole thing?
I have a similar thought process as Patrick does. I'm not quite sure how to articulate kind of my interest level in this, because I'm a fan regardless, so I'm going to keep on watching. I completely understand why they're doing this, to bring in a new audience, because it is challenging to bring in a new audience in wrestling. And one of the ways you do it is bringing over those crossover stars. And in order to bring the likelihood of a fan base that's going to stay, you target audiences of sports that are similar to pro wrestling. So, of course, MMA, boxing, all of those have very similar elements. And so that's kind of an easier fan pool to bring in. I also agree that, you know, pro wrestling is like my favorite restaurant, that hole in the wall restaurant that no one knows about. And now that all these people are coming to my favorite restaurant, I'm like, strangers are coming to my place. Like,
get out.
I'm very unsure about how I feel about all of this new publicity happening. But it's good for WWE, and overall it will remain good for pro wrestling, because that's how I got to be a fan of WWE. Is I started watching Nitro first. That was my first exposure. And then when I, you know, started to not like Nitro as much, or as soon as I wanted to watch something different, I watched Raw. So hopefully that too will allow them to watch other forms of wrestling for those who it sticks with. There may be some that come in for this particular storyline and they leave and that's it. But it could also bring in new fans that truly like pro wrestling. And that's going to be great for us as fans to grow our fan base. But yeah, I'm also not that excited for my restaurant to be full of all these strangers and people that I don't know come here to judge my restaurant, because only I can do that. Only we can criticize pro wrestling. Yeah.
Right. Well, it's smart on Fox's part, though, because in this most recent episode of the Attitude of Aggression, there was an interview with Al Snow. And I had asked Al about, hey, you know, AEW, we're talking about the Wednesday Night Wars, and AEW has always speculated that there is a dormant fan base lying out there that just kind of went to sleep after the Attitude Era. 1 million to 2 million fans who are just waiting for some reason to get re-energized. And Fox is like, yeah, maybe that's true. But we'd rather create our own organic new fan base. And let's do that by tapping into some of these other sports and bringing them in. But like, you know, like Miranda's saying, getting them there is one thing. Keeping them there is going to be another story entirely. And if their favorites bail out after Crown Jewel 2 or whatever, you know, good luck keeping them sticking around. But, you know, we could talk about this more. But let's kind of move on, because I do want to touch bases. I mean, we could talk about Roman Reigns and the Lumberjack match, which was all right, but nothing was really resolved. But let's get to that. Let's talk the main event, because that's where the action is at. Mm-hmm. Kofi Kingston drops the WWE Championship to Brock Lesnar in, what, 8 seconds? Something ridiculous like that.
Yeah, they SD Jones's ass.
Yeah, and I mean, there is a lot of people. There are. That's poor grammar. You'd never know I was an attorney with grammar like that. But there are a lot of people very upset about the ending to this. Count me amongst those who are just like, what the hell just happened and why? I get why they did it, and it was to set up what happens at the end, but did they do Kofi dirty? With the reign that he had, did they do him dirty by having him go out quicker than he did? And remember when he fought Brock at Beast in the East a few years ago? At least he lasted a few minutes in that match and got in right. A couple shots. Now, I mean, I really thought, man, as WWE champion, it's going to be a pretty good match. Brock may win this thing. I figured there'd be a non-finish. Ray would get involved. Somebody would get involved and foil this thing. I never in a million years thought it would go down that way. So I turn it to you guys. Those are my thoughts. Did they do Kofi dirty with this finish?
They absolutely.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Absolutely.
Let's give Miranda credit, though, because Miranda on the show last week, she was the only one who picked Brock to win and become the new champion. So good on you.
Okay. Did you see it going down that way, though?
No. No, I thought that Kofi had some kind of a fighting chance. I mean, he's been your reigning WWE champion now for months, and he really has defended that belt well. He's had, you know, good matches, and I thought that at least they'd give him 5 minutes. You know, I knew it wasn't going to be a long match, but I didn't think it'd be that short. And I just feel like it's such a disservice to Kofi and his build. And it felt like they were just so trigger happy of moving on with what happened afterward that they literally like, we don't care. Just get rid of it. Get rid of it. You know? So I was really actually pretty sad.
They're live. I mean, yeah, that it was a stunned reaction that was soon followed by kind of anger. And then everything kind of switched a little bit. You know, watching it live, I was like looking at my son, looking at the time remaining, and I'm thinking, man, they're kind of cutting this thing awfully close. It's not going to leave a lot of time. So I figured, okay, there's just going to be some BS finish involved. That's not what happened. But then we get, you know, these rumors that you started to hear earlier in the week, Cain Velasquez, he's in talks with AEW. He's in talks with WWE. Okay, that's great. Somewhere down the road, Cain Velasquez versus Brock Lesnar. Never in a million years did I think Kofi would go down in 8 seconds. And then we'd see Cain Velasquez, of all people, come out. Now, I know why he's doing it, and you found out on Raw last night it's all about family and that sort of thing. But, you know, a lot of people are probably like, who is this guy? And when he took his shirt off, at first I thought it was Dominic with like a buzz cut or something like that. You know, from Wilson, it's like, is that his son? He got a little bit bigger. But then you realize who it is. And so there's the Fox imprint again, getting the MMA involved. And yeah, now I'll give credit to Brock. He sold fear like we haven't really seen before, and uncertainty and doubt in himself. But your guys' thoughts on this whole thing, and now they're going to have a match at Crown Jewel, apparently. Man, talk about hot-shotting somebody. What are your guys' thoughts on this whole thing?
So, okay. So I do want to back up real quick. I don't understand the element of the belt as part of this fight. Like, it is, to me, it is an unnecessary element as part of this fight. When you talk, and Miranda's doing the preach hand gesture for those of you who can't see her on Skype, and that was amazing. Because this story didn't need a belt to be told. And that's the thing that I think is really interesting, because this story was already one that existed because these two have history, like legit history in MMA. Velasquez beat Brock or something like that.
He's got that scar under his eye. Gave him that.
And yeah, so why do we need a belt to do it? In fact, you could have had that been what saved Kofi.
Yep.
And it would have been fine. And that I think is what really is kind of mind boggling for this. Because I'm like the two of you. I totally get why we're doing this. I get why the WWE is behind it. Cain Velasquez, for those who don't know, has been doing some wrestling. Like, it's not like some professional wrestling. So it's not like, you know, it's nearly as evident as it was with Tyson Fury off the street that, like, hey, this guy hasn't really been trained that way. But it's like, if this was really just to suck at the Saudi Arabian teat one more time for the money for that Crown Jewel pay-per-view, which, fuck that pay-per-view, I won't watch it and never will.
Don't hold back, Patrick.
It's just, no, I fucking hate it. It's it's just sort of a wasted element. And I do think that's really where I feel the big disservice to Kofi Kingston is. You illogically had him make a rookie mistake, even though he's a, you know, multi-year veteran at this, you know, over a decade in the business veteran, who, I'm sorry, just because this is the first time you've ever been champion, you faced Brock before, you know, you don't charge in, moron. Like, everybody knows that. You made him look like a goof at having me try to explain it away on YouTube. And it was all to set up this match, which I think is an exciting story that is being told about a third of the way that it could have been told and been more compelling. I think it could have been more compelling without the belt. This guy that Brock's afraid of that's going to keep him from the belt. That would have been fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. This story did not need a belt. And I could have seen this that after Crown Jewel, Brock could have beat Kofi. Because I believe that Brock is going to win at Crown Jewel. That they're not bringing in Kane for this just for Brock to lose. That Kane is going to lose against Brock. And then that would have built momentum for Brock to then challenge for the WWE title instead of doing it now. Can I understand why they're doing it now in order to bring in that audience to have that title on someone that is known throughout the world? Totally get it. But they could have waited a few weeks, a month to do that and also build a story with Kofi to do something else in the meantime. So I wasn't necessarily a big fan of Kane's entrance. I'm a big fan of Cain Velasquez. Don't get me wrong, but the way that he presented himself, pretty much like limping to the ring, there wasn't anything in there that
big
me,
old knee brace.
Yeah, like that was not intimidating. Like, he beat a healthy Kofi, and he's afraid of almost a one-legged Cain Velasquez. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. So I was just not a big fan of the execution of it either. I am excited, you know, now that it's sit with me for a few days, I am excited about the possibility of this match. I'm really curious as to how that will go too, because Kane has been training in more Lucha Libre style wrestling, whereas, you know, Brock is a very just different style. So how do you work with that? How does that come together?
And Brock doesn't always work great with larger opponents too. Like, I mean, we joke about this a lot, but Brock, I think Brock's better matches are when he has guys that he can really just sort of toss around and look good doing it. And I am a little worried about, you know, you see Cain Velasquez walking up and clearly looks like he's got some mobility issues. He's a big guy. And sometimes Brock as an opponent has struggled with guys that are on the level when it comes to size. Before we move on, one of the other things that I do hope comes to fruition out of the travesty that was the 10-second defeat. Somebody on Twitter, and I don't remember who, about 48 hours after this all went down, and for those of you who didn't see, there was an outpouring of support, not only from fans, but from the locker room itself. Yeah. And that was my tweet regarding the matter. Is if you want to have an idea of what Kofi's title reign really meant, read the comments from people that work with him. Daniel Bryan wrote a very nice thing
and still
kept kayfabe by saying, I hate that you beat me, but was like, it was a very nice tweet or Instagram post or whatever it was. Like, the locker room loves him. And somebody pointed out that within 24 hours, Kofi has already been built back into a sympathetic chasing babyface for whenever they want to do it, however they want to do it. And that could be a good thing if the WWE capitalizes on it.
Yeah, Kofi getting another shot at Brock somewhere down the line has got some built-in interest. He's certainly going to be the sympathetic underdog. People are going to be pulling for him, and maybe, I mean, that match will probably go down like Brock's matches against AJ or Daniel or Finn. Kofi will give it a really good effort and come up short in the end. But we'll see. Like, we could stay talking about SmackDown for a while. Last thing I want to ask you about SmackDown before we have to move on to Hell in a Cell. SmackDown did almost 4 million viewers, a really big number as far as SmackDown is concerned. Massive debut. Everybody was talking about AEW's numbers early in the week with 1.4 million. SmackDown doubled that and then some. That's a really big number. What do you guys think of that number? Is that something they can realistically maintain, or was that just a one-off sort of thing and you're going to see them settle around maybe 2 million or something like that?
Option B.
Yes.
I think it's option B. I think that much like AEW is going to, I think that number is going to go down too. Because it's that novelty and that curiosity factor. It was funny. I DVR'd AEW, and watched NXT, and now I don't have Greg here to accuse me of not watching NXT, again on the show, but I still haven't finished AEW. I'm about halfway through the first episode, it's okay. But I see those numbers going down. I see that there's a curiosity crossover piece of it, and people are they're going to make their decision to either go back to watch out of NXT, or they're going to decide that they like AEW better and stick with it. But that number will drop, and I think it'll plateau, and I think you won't really know what the deal is with either company. In my opinion, with the AEW Wednesday night thing with NXT, I don't think you're going to know for at least a year, maybe two. And I think with SmackDown, within 90 days, depending on how the show is going and where the direction of the program is. And if the WWE keeps doing horrible endings, that number will definitely plateau and maybe go down even more.
Where's that preach graphic, man?
Right.
Yes. Preach.
Yeah. Exactly. You know,
yeah, totally agree. And we already saw the ratings of NXT drop. I mean, even from their first show in the past 3 weeks. So we already have seen that pattern, and I don't think that's going to change. I completely agree. It probably will be cut in half around the 2 million mark, and then if fans are not happy, and also again, how long will this crossover appeal? How long will it be maintained? Is it really going to be until Crown Jewel? And then after that, are we no longer going to see Tyson? Are we no longer going to see Kane? And so then that element of crossover will be gone. Will those fans stay? probably not, to be honest. You know, you'll probably only capture a small percentage of those fans as net fans, gained fans. And then from there, they'll just leave and then maybe come back when WWE does it again sometime in the future, because they will continue to do it. And I also do think that now there's almost more of an incentive for athletes of other sports now to come on WWE, because you have that bigger platform. And now with athletes in general, it's not just about what you do as a career, but it's also who you have on social media, who you have as sponsors. And so WWE can be really great platform for other athletes to come in and have some fun.
Yeah, I expect Kane's going to stick around, and maybe that's the story they want to run with him. You get there with Brock, you get destroyed because this is Brock's world and not yours. But then Kane gradually improves in the rematch, is a different match entirely. Maybe that's the story they ultimately want to tell with him. I don't know. But let's talk about, Patrick's talking about bad endings and how that could impact WWE and the industry as a whole. Let's talk Hell in a Cell. And let's be honest, it wasn't all bad. And it started off.
No, it wasn't.
It started off with the highest of highs, with what I would consider probably the women's match of the year that I've seen so far. And that includes the WrestleMania main event. Sasha and Becky tore down the house with the opening match. It's going to get overshadowed by the end, which is a fucking shame and a crime just about that you would do that. That, hey, right, you're going to shit
fuck
all
those
over.
Guys.
Yeah, you're going to shit all over this match because of what they did at the end. And the match between Becky and Sasha is a brilliant artistic display of violence. I mean, you couldn't get a better match. Your guys' thoughts on this thing, was it as good, if not better, than Sasha and Charlotte was 2 years ago, which I personally think it was better and exceeded it, but that's just me. But what did you guys think? Is this a women's match of the year contender? I mean, it was a great match in my opinion. What did you guys think of it?
Yeah, I completely agree. I really liked this match. They didn't play it safe. You know, even though they were mindful of some of their moves and also the utilization of their body in this match, I felt like they put all their aggression and heart and effort into this. And I really appreciated that as a fan. I was a little concerned about their safety, because that's a unique thing about women's bodies too. It just, the mechanics of it work differently. So you can't do a lot of the same moves, especially those hardcore violent moves that men do. So I was really curious about, you know, what kind of spots they were going to do, but you also saw the intensity, and I'm a big fan of storytelling. That is my guilty pleasure in wrestling. And they really told a fantastic story in this match. I really, really enjoyed it.
So I got to give Greg credit on this, that thing that I'm about to steal. That match should have ended the show.
Definitely.
Yes. Think about
100%.
And think about what we're talking about in regards to Hell in a Cell. If we still have what happened, but we ended with the Becky and Sasha match as opposed to opening with it, I think it still leaves a sour taste in our mouths. I still think we're not happy with what happened in the other match, but we're walking away. And this is a classic example of an otherwise solid show being soured and ruined by an ending that everybody hated, because nobody's talking about the rest of the show. And there was good stuff. There was the match of the night was the opener. But there were a lot of other really good matches. Like I personally, and a lot of people could say this, but I liked the Daniel Bryan Roman Reigns match versus the Bludgeon Brothers.
Absolutely.
Like I loved it.
Absolutely.
It was totally fun. And nobody cares. Nobody cares, because all we can talk about is how terrible the ending of the show was. And yeah, that's the thing, is Sasha and Becky brought it. They did everything that they could to get the crowd jacked up and excited. And if that match ends the show, we're talking about them more.
Yeah, exactly. If that match, Greg said it, like you said, Patrick, match order matters. And yeah, if you close the show with Sasha and Becky, no one gives a shit about this fiend Seth. I mean, maybe you do. Maybe some people are still disappointed, but it gets completely overshadowed by the epic match at the end, that to the point you're like, Wow, that ending was, that beginning was really terrible, but boy, it ended strong. I think in general with pay-per-views, you want to end strong. You don't want to start strong and absolutely. End limp. And that's what they did on it. Like Clash of Champions.
There's a reason.
Clash of Champions was the opposite. You know, it started kind of slow, then it built up at the end and it ended strong. And this one went the opposite way. But anyway, I didn't mean to cut you off, Patrick, but I mean, that was just.
Well, no, there's. I just think through history, there's so many examples of where that happens. Was it Starrcade 97?
Yeah.
Where Sting didn't win the title, but like won the title. Like it was supposed to be this culminating moment in WCW and it died and killed an otherwise decent pay-per-view. This happens all the time. And when it does, we then walk away being like, that's a bad pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. When it may not be a bad pay-per-view, it's a bad moment in an otherwise decent pay-per-view, but we will forever like this Hell in a Cell will forever be regarded as like the worst thing in the history of the Cell.
And it wasn't,
and of the pay-per-view. Yeah. And I mean, I also sense I'm still more bothered by the fact that they hung the Big Boss Man from a cell once. That's my least favorite Hell in a Cell.
That's
moment.
True.
They strung the Big Boss Man up. The Undertaker straight up murdered a dude and like whatever. So
the '90s, hell of a time.
Oh God.
Yeah. I mean, no, go ahead, man.
No, just back to your point. The match was great. The women were great. And it's a shame that this is where we are, with this pay-per-view.
Well, and that makes it blows my mind too, because we do value women's matches so much, and this is only the second women's Hell in a Cell match. The first one was all about history. And I think I've heard this a few times too, about how whenever you have the first of something, the first is not always the best. We may remember it as the best because it's the first, but that Hell in a Cell match from last year was good, but this one was just so much better. And I think it's just now a struggle for women's matches to continuously, you know, exceed expectations and do well, but they're always going to be judged against what else is on the card as far as the men's matches. And then when something terrible goes with the men or something doesn't go as planned with the men, you know, it automatically makes it that much harder for a women's match to get that much more recognition and respect in the future. So I also think that this was just not a smart strategy for them to do this, because it really jeopardized the credibility of the entire pay-per-view. Like, people are not going to look at Hell in a Cell in the same way, in general, just that the theme of that match. So it's just going to be viewed as, in the past, in history, we look at it with, you know, Mick Foley going through the cage and
off the top of the cage.
Off the top of the cage and the brutality. And now we have this. It just feels like it's a bit kind of tarnished the history of it. And it's going to take a while for people to look at Hell in a Cell as a serious match, as a serious, you know, threat again.
Yeah, before we get to the main event, because of course we need to touch bases on that controversy, Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns versus the Bludgeon Brothers, or whatever the hell they're called now, which was a really brutal and a very physical match and a damn good match. Were you guys surprised right up to the end when Daniel said he didn't want to shake Roman's hand? I thought,
Brothers got a hug.
But that was the last thing, because I mean, literally, I was right up to the end thinking, They're not really turning Daniel Bryan face again. And that's exactly what they've done here. You got to figure he's going to be a top baby face on one of the two brands. Were you guys surprised that there wasn't anything more to this?
I want to say yes, but no, I wasn't. Daniel Bryan's such a good dude. Like, he's just such a nice dude. Like, he plays a heel so well, but I can totally buy, like, you know, the respect and like that being what leads to the face turn. And, you know, they've gradually done it with Rowan being kind of the catalyst for that. And yeah, like when he held the arms open, I was like, yes, do the hug. Let's see the hug. I want the hug.
I'm such a Daniel Bryan mark. Like, I was so excited. But you know who also is going to get a good rub from this? Roman Reigns. Like,
because he needs it.
He needs it. Like, now that Daniel Bryan has vouched for him, like, Roman Reigns is cool again, you know? And he has been, like, you know, don't get me wrong, but I still feel like people have still been having mixed feelings with Roman Reigns. So,
oh, I saw people about the... Yeah, I saw people leaving Bakersfield last night with Roman Reigns sucks signs. I'm like, you do remember this guy did fight leukemia, right? Oh, never right? mind.
Well, yeah,
It's not even about the disease thing, though. What cracks me up is, when's the last time Roman Reigns was really, truly shoved, quote unquote, shoved down your throat?
Not since he came back.
Like, and that's the thing that, you know, as we rant and rave about wrestling fans, they have and I would say, you know, they have cooled on using him in the way that pisses everybody off. And yet they're still, and those people who got those signs, Dave, like, those are just people who only go. Like, they just, that's it. I do think that most of the fandom.
Wait,
you know,
wait, Patrick. Are you telling me that morons in Southern California don't know how to let go of something? Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, basically.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I'm with you. I'm with you on that. Go ahead.
Right.
Tweet it.
Not all morons are in Southern California, but there are a lot. but anyway.
I got to agree, too.
But yeah, it's just, it's one of those things, like, he's not being shoved down your throats. He's being in mid-card matches. He's just doing his thing. And he'll be back in the world title picture at some point. And the second he does, I'm sure people will complain about it again, because that's the cool thing to do. But they really haven't pushed him the way that people think that they pushed him.
Not at all.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry. Soapbox over.
I'm just a big fan of this. I hope they tag more. I hope they get more hugs. Maybe they make a t-shirt. I may buy it. Who knows? Like, the possibilities are endless. We're living in a good time.
Bring in Bailey. You know, Bailey, you know, should she hug again?
She needs to be rehabilitated. Yeah.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah.
She's broke. Yeah. Broken Bailey.
She's broken Bailey. She's going to be Sister Abigail, maybe. But... the rest, God. A lot of Hell in a Cell were rematches and retreads and things like that. We don't need to talk about that. But I did want to talk about the women's tag titles changing to the Kabuki Warriors. Asuka breaking out the green mist. Man, what did you guys think of that? I mean, is this what she needed to become truly relevant again? Heel Kabuki Warriors? Kairi Sane changed her look a little bit last night. What do you guys say? I mean, I'm all in favor of it at this point. I mean, anything that kind of remotely resembles the Great Muta, yeah, sign me up. And Asuka breaking out the green mist was a unexpected turn of events, but the Kabuki Warriors taking down and winning the tag titles. What do you guys think of that?
I mean, we haven't really had the chance to see a solid heel Asuka character. We saw a little bit of that in NXT, but she's primarily been a face. And so when you've been the same character for this long, the Kabuki Warriors really hadn't been much of a threat to the women's tag team division to shake things up, to shake her character up, to also then, you know, really showcase her level of aptitude as a wrestler, but also, you know, as a character. I think it was really necessary to do a change. I mean, it wasn't going to happen any other way. Yeah, I'm a big fan of heel Asuka. We haven't really seen much of a heel Asuka before. We saw glimpses of it in NXT, but pretty much through most of her NXT reign and time on the main roster, it's been as a face, and it's also been kind of hit or miss as far as the impact and you know, how fans have appreciated that character or not. So this revamp, this change, I'm a fan of it. It draws interest, and it's also a good way to now have some heel champions face the faces of Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss, a good, you know, possible chase for them. And yeah, just it's liven things up. So I'm here for it.
So I like a lot of that. I only have one request, and that is that Asuka needs to spend some time in the performance center or just somewhere practicing spraying the green mist. She's a little, she needs to work on that a little bit. She needs to practice.
She should,
you know, and there is a
She should be watching tapes of the Great Muta. I mean, that guy sprayed it better than anybody.
Well, and that's the thing, is there's a long tradition of the green mist being sprayed. You've got the Great Muta. You've got Tajiri.
Kabuki.
You got Kabuki. Even as far back as, you know, Georgia Championship Wrestling, when the ninja used to spray the mist, although he wasn't quite that Asian. He was probably a white dude in makeup. But it still counts because he was a ninja. We were just supposed to let that go. But yeah, like it's all there. She just needs to practice. I like the heel tag team. I think that it's a lot of fun. It's a little tropey. It bugs me a little bit because it's, you know, another evil foreign tag team. Please don't have them singing the Japanese national anthem or anything like that.
Oh, it's coming. It's coming.
No, please don't. But I think the talent of two women that are carrying those belts right now is the highest that you could possibly get out of the women's tag team division right now.
Yeah. I dig the team. I think it's great seeing them turn heel and like, yeah, having them go up a position against Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross, who are solidly baby faces, which I know a lot of people wanted for Alexa. Before we talk about the main event, Charlotte is now a 10-time women's champion. She beats Bayley.
LOL.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you didn't see that this was coming, did you? But, you know, Charlotte is a 10-time champion. Well, what else can you say about her? She's become a meme unto herself almost. But she's still a 10-time champ. Is there any stopping her anytime soon?
Nope.
No.
Fair enough.
that's all I got, man. No. Nope.
Yeah.
She's quite impressive. So, let's talk the main event because I know we're getting close to the end of this thing. Very controversial ending. Hell in a Cell match ending in a no contest, and no one's really sure what happened. And yeah, they're being deliberately evasive about, was that, did they stop the match in favor of Seth Rollins? Everybody on the internet says it's a disqualification, which isn't what happened. They injected some stupid stuff into this match, red lighting the whole way. It's like, why are we doing this? That's just like, wait, why are we doing this? Then it's just not a very good match. The stuff that they do to each other wasn't very, like Miranda was talking earlier, the women have to be careful about not trying to take the crazy bumps as much as the guys do. And the guys just didn't do much of anything. Seth has a conflict with his inner conscience during this match that's pointed out to him by a referee. You don't want to do this, man. This isn't who you are. I'm like, what is going on here? Then the match just ends and we don't know what happened. There's no finish. And then the Fiend has apparently got Undertaker powers as he just absorbs all this abuse. Is he dead? No, he's alive and well and destroying Seth afterwards. Fans hated this match, hated the ending. It got a tremendous backlash. Like you guys said earlier, it sullied the entire pay-per-view and made you forget about that tremendous match at the beginning. I don't know what to say about it. I mean, I'm sure you guys have your opinions. I mean, one thing I was wondering, see if there's anything, were they trying to kind of go for a double turn at some point in this match and try to flip Seth heel and the Fiend face? Is it even possible to make the Fiend face? Because whether they were trying to do that or not, crowd reaction wise, they flipped during this match and the crowd was solidly behind the Fiend at the end. They were solidly behind the Fiend in Bakersfield last night. They may have not have intended on doing a double turn, but was that the practical effect of this?
Possibly. I think it'll be interesting when we actually get more story out of this. Because that was one, you know, if we want to talk about something that left people wanting on Raw, really wasn't a whole heck of a lot on Raw about this other than kind of a recap of what happened, other than what happened after the cameras went off or something. Like, apparently Cesaro got beat up. I don't know. I missed that.
He did.
Did it happen on the show or did I miss this?
It happened after the cameras, after they stopped. It's on YouTube today. They showed Tyson Fury knocked Cesaro out. Cesaro challenged The Miz to a match. And right as Cesaro was setting up for the neutralizer, presumably he might actually win a match, the Fiend attacked and laid him low. So anyway, that's what happened.
And so there's a lot of problems that I had with this match, not just the result. One, I think that the Fiend showed how over the character was with the crowd, with the way that they were reacting. When every time that Seth Rollins is going for another curb stop, he's getting booed and like mercilessly booed, that tells you that the crowd definitely wants to see something better out of the Fiend and more out of the Fiend, and that that's the horse they're getting behind. I think I understand what they were trying to do with the whole monster angle with him, and that he's unstoppable. I think Greg's bold prediction may come true, even if it didn't on this particular show, Miranda. So you're lucky, hey. And I don't know that you should take him up
and
on it ever
still,
again. That's
not
right,
on Twitter
freak. Right. Because I do wonder if that mask is going to have some sort of connection to the actual, like, sort of power of the Fiend, because it's just, it's too obvious to not be true. But to have Seth Rollins just, what was it, 12 or 13, what was it, 12 curb stomps, and the Fiend doesn't get up, and it only took 3 to beat Brock Lesnar, who's been unstoppable and unbeatable
on
everything.
And 4 to beat Braun Strowman.
And 4 to beat Braun Strowman.
Right.
We jump to 11, and it doesn't stop him. We have him waylay, you know, with the toolbox and the hammer and this whole thing, and we get this dumb finish of just no, the result is no result.
Right. This is still Bray Wyatt we're talking about, right?
Right.
We didn't get a new character. It's still Bray.
Right. And I mean, I guess I'll give credit to the WWE for not having him go down to a pin, because every time he's been crazy and not caring and mysterious, they like have him get pinned and lost, and he loses everything. But then the aftermath of Bray coming back up, and it wasn't so much that he came back up and he locked in the mandible claw. It's the stupid attempt, in my opinion, of the WWE to try and add some gritty realism by having Seth bleeding out the damn mouth. Like, and what to me looked obvious, like if any human being bleeds like that out the mouth, get them to the hospital, because they be dying. And Seth clearly was not. And so it just added an element of silly to something that was just pissing people off already. They better have something good up their sleeve, because I think that this is something that could be really hard for Bray Wyatt to recover from. I think Seth will recover because he's proven that time and time again, and they've really stuck with him. I think this is a really dangerous time for Bray Wyatt right now and his character.
Back to what I was saying earlier, I think this actually impacted Hell in a Cell as in the institution of Hell in a Cell. Because when they do this again next year, I feel like it's already going to be off to a bad start. You really need to have now a really solid Hell in a Cell match to make up for this, which is going back to what we said earlier, why this probably should have started the show instead of ended the pay-per-view. I was not a big fan of the red lighting. I was surprised kept that throughout the entirety of the match. I get why they did it, essentially to mask, you know, what was happening with the toolbox. Also, the ref trying to guide Seth's conscience. One, yeah. That's you're an official. Like, you are supposed to be objective. You aren't putting in your 2 cents about what you think someone should or should not do based off of their character. You are there to officiate and make sure that they're following the rules. So to input your own opinion about what Seth should be doing is completely out of line and out of character of a referee. So that was kind of a silly thing for them to write up. Or put as in this story. And I had another thought, but that just got me so riled up that I forgot the rest of what I was going to say. It was just a lot of kind of silly writing. And in some ways, I think as fans, we knew that no one was going to win because of the fact that you knew that Seth wasn't going to lose the belt. But you also knew that the momentum that they have with this Fiend character, that he wasn't going to lose. So knowing that this was something was going to happen where no one was going to win. I kind of somewhat expected that, but the way they did it, again, in Hell in a Cell, if this was any other match, it would have made a lot of sense, and I probably wouldn't have been so angry, but you ruined Hell in a Cell. You ruined it for me. I won't be able to look at Hell in a Cell the same way, because you have this level of, like, and maybe not finality, because it, you know, in the past few years, you still have stories continue, but right. Just like this history, just this ability to, you're you're taking two people in there knowing that there's no way out. There's really no rules.
They've always gotten outside of the cage. Like the very first Hell in the Cell, Shawn Michaels got out of the cage.
They have, but let me ask you that, because I want to tag on to what Miranda said. Right. What they've done with Hell in a Cell, that's 2 years in a row in the main event there's been a non-finish in a match, sure, that has traditionally been a feud ender in the most brutal ways possible. Generally, Hell in a Cell was looked upon like Elimination Chamber used to be. This is going to be a bloody war. Now, I get that they don't do blood anymore, but look, if you're going to have an entire pay-per-view centered around Hell in a Cell, and then you're going to remove the blood and the brutality aspect of it and make it a spot fest, and then on top of that, hey, we're not even going to give you an actual finish, that I think Miranda's onto something, that they have really taken this entire concept and diluted it to the point of irrelevance right now. And that's kind of what, go ahead. I mean, that's just, no, I just no, wanted no, to no. jump on what she's saying.
Keep it right. Keep going. So here's my thing. I think that one of the things you just hit on is a big problem. And I think that we've talked about this with other pay-per-views. Having a pay-per-view that is centered around Hell in a Cell is a dumb idea. Because you've already committed yourself to having to have something in the cell. And so you have to figure out a way to create a feud that would be intense enough to actually fit into the scenario that you want to put it into. And the WWE really hasn't booked with that kind of foresight in a long time. And when you look at those first Hell in a Cell matches that were being put out there, you didn't just have the cell for whatever. And that's really, to me, is the problem with this match right now, and where I could see, you know, you argue, I think it killed the pay-per-view. I think the cell needs to go away for like a year and a half to 2 years, and needs to be broken out.
Like at WrestleMania.
And not just broken out at WrestleMania. It needs to be broken out in a feud involving either Triple H or The Undertaker. and I'm not even joking a little bit, because if there are two names, in my opinion, that are synonymous with that match, it's Triple H, either one, not them fighting each other, but one of the two of them being in some sort of feud that would be important enough to put it in a cell to finish it.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're taking away the organic nature of a feud that leads, say, look, man, we got to do something with these guys. Let's put them inside Hell in a Cell. Right. War Games is going to run into the same problem in NXT, that, hey, we're setting up this whole thing around, we got to get four guys. Hey, okay, we got the Undisputed Era. We got four guys built in there. Now, what's going on with four other guys that has gotten them to the point that they've got to go into the most brutal match in NXT? So, yeah, I agree with you, Patrick. When you're centering, I mean, Elimination Chamber is one thing. Okay, that match is just set up to be the ultimate last man standing scenario. But Hell in a Cell, War Games, that's different. I agree with you. We're already kind of running long on this thing, so I did want to get to the last segment of this thing. We could talk Hell in a Cell. I'm sure we're going to hear about it. We do have the draft coming up, and that's coming up Friday night on SmackDown on Fox is the first part of it, and then it's going to continue a few nights later on Monday Night Raw. And it sure seemed like Raw this week was a lame duck transitional Raw, if ever there was one. Oh, hey, we don't want to advance.
Treading water.
We don't want to. Yeah, let's just get to the draft and then go on from there. what I wanted to do here, kind of as a fun thing, we talked about it before we started recording, as to whether, you know, is Raw going to have a representative there Friday night, or is SmackDown going to get to draft their people first? How many draft picks do they get before Raw gets theirs? That seems really like, wait, you're going to give them the first 5 picks or 10 picks and then hope that Raw doesn't take anybody worth the crap? So I don't know how they're going to do it, but, I figured one of you guys could be the Raw general manager, or whoever they're going to designate, and one of you guys can be the SmackDown general manager, and I'll let you guys decide who's who, and just kind of the first 5 picks. We won't do it like we're fearful they're going to do it where SmackDown gets 5 in a row. We'll just alternate, but which one of you wants to be the Raw general manager, and which one wants to be the SmackDown general manager?
So I was saying earlier that before this past Friday, I probably would have picked myself to be the Raw general manager, because I am more of the sports entertainer, less on the wrestling side, whereas that's really what Patrick's strong suit is, as well as SmackDown. But now that we've seen SmackDown, Now it's on Fox. Now you have all, you know, these things happening. I don't know anymore. I don't know what's the sports entertaining show and what's the wrestling show anymore.
And so are you saying you want to be the SmackDown GM? Is that what happened there?
I guess I declare myself, the big statement. I guess I will be now. I'm just going with the flow. I'll be the SmackDown GM. Just real time, since for the sake of transparency, I have to look at the app and actually look at the roster to see who is on what show because I have no idea.
Wild card, bitches.
Yeah, wild card, because I have no idea. So I am just going to be looking according to the WWE app on who is on what show. I'm going to draft.
Well, yeah, I mean, if it's a draft, I guess everybody's available, right? I mean, there is nobody who's been, no protected, except NXT. I don't know if they're, who knows? They haven't said whether they're available or not.
Yeah,
but
they haven't said if they're on the table.
But I would imagine, I would hope they are.
And just because we're short on time and words. So speaking of NXT, honestly, one person I'd pick from NXT, Shayna Baszler. That's a no-brainer for me.
Definitely. But, Miranda, you got the number one pick in the draft, SmackDown, Friday night. You're in charge. Who you taking, number one?
Number one. You know what? I'm going to go with what I just said. I'm just going to go Shayna Baszler. I mean, I'm looking right now at the – I know it's kind of a crazy pick to have, but I mean, she's a force to be reckoned with. She's super dominant in NXT. She's going to dominate the Raw women's roster. Hell, she could even beat up some men if she really wanted to, and I'd let her. So, you know.
That would be awesome to see the NXT Women's Champion drafted to SmackDown. That would really get people talking, be like, wait, people right off the bat, be like, wait, what the hell is going on? You want to get some eyeballs going. There you go. Patrick, assuming Raw gets to pick next, because I can't imagine they're giving SmackDown carte blanche to the first five picks.
So can I just tell you how pissed off I am that you picked an NXT personality? And you know why? Because I was going to pick an NXT personality. And so now I look like a fucking copycat when I draft Adam Cole to Raw.
Wow.
Jeez. Thanks for nothing. Making me look a fool. And I don't care what any of y'all say. Adam Cole, baby. I just want him up on one of the big brands. I want him up on the big brands so bad. So I'm calling him up.
Yeah, it would be great if they really, I mean, that's something nobody's really expecting. They're all expecting NXT to remain this developmental brand on Wednesday nights, but wouldn't it be a surprise if they said, oh no, we got three brands rolling and we're going to really mix things up. If it goes back to Raw at number two, Miranda, who are you taking with the second pick?
Well, according to the WWE app, this person is on the Raw roster and, I have to do it to save him. I have to do it to save him. I'm going to pick Bray Wyatt. I think he needs to take some time away from all of the craziness with Seth. I think being on a new brand with new people, with new challengers, is a way to save him from all of the madness and embarrassment of Hell in a Cell.
And the Fox guys, guys at Fox are probably like, yeah, bring the Fiend to Fox. We would be just fine with that. Let's get him on here and see what kind of damage he can do on Fox. Patrick, with Raw's second pick, who would you take?
Oh, jeez. Who would I take? See, this is where it gets tough. It's not because I don't know who. It's because I really like the Raw roster better than the SmackDown roster. It's more about who would I elevate. So let me think here. You know what? I know that they want him over there on Fox, but I can't pass up, even though I don't like the guy very much as a champion. I can't pass up the SmackDown WWE champion. And he's called the WWE champion. I want Brock Lesnar. I'm gonna take Brock.
That's a solid pick. I mean, you don't know who he's going to end up, but yeah, Fox could definitely use him on their brand. Miranda, third pick. I guess we'll cut it off at three picks just to wet people's whistle and get them excited about this, because we don't want to run too far over. But Miranda, you got the third pick in the draft. Who would you take?
Looking through this roster, it's you know what? This is tough. You know what? I'm gonna go back to the NXT roster. I'm going to bring in someone that I think will add just a lot of great character, a lot of eyes on the product. Velveteen Dream.
Yeah, the Velveteen Dream on SmackDown. That's a great pick.
See, I'm stunned. I thought for sure that you'd pick there. You know, Baron Corbin. so much potential there.
Shocked. I'm sure you're shocked. I know, right?
I'll give you, you know, cash considerations and a player to be named later if you take Baron Corbin off my roster. with that being said, I'm gonna keep rating your champions. You're gonna have to do a lot of rebooking over on your side of the house. Because I would really love, actually, is he a RAR? I gotta look. Oh, he's SmackDown. I'm taking Shinsuke Nakamura. I'm bringing him back. I'm taking the Intercontinental Champion. And now I've got both him and AJ Styles back on a program. And we're going to have some fun.
Unless, of course, the SmackDown general manager grabs AJ's from you for cashing considerations or less than that.
The offer was on the table from Baron Corbin. There's no talk about AJ. There's
no.
This is the deep discussions that they're going to be having.
Cuts.
Yeah.
Deep cuts.
Before we cut out of here, though, who do you guys see any established teams being split up in the draft? Do you think that maybe they split up the New Day, maybe they split up the OC? What team would you each have on the chopping block as likely to get split up during the draft?
Oh, gosh. Ooh. We've talked
about it. Go ahead. I was going to say I know they just started to put promos out on them again, so maybe this isn't realistic. But as far as individuals, I put Authors of Pain. Like, I can see them being individually successful-ish. I'm not sure. But I also can't look at some of the other tag teams, like the Usos, like the New Day, even like the Viking Raiders. I think they're already somewhat too established to break up, but something as fairly new or just unestablished as Authors of Pain has the potential where you could split them up and they'd be fine.
I think that there's a real opportunity, and you already mentioned it, Dave. I do think there's a real opportunity, and we've talked about it for years, and it's been talked about for years, to draft a member of the New Day away and split them up and put them on different brands, especially with the type of momentum that Kofi has as being a former champion and still, I think, has as someone who could chase one of the championships. You know, we've also said that, you know, there's also been a longstanding thought that Big E Langston deserves a shot as a singles guy again. And it's just been so long since it's happened. But that would be one that, if it happened, I wouldn't be surprised at all. It would make a ton of sense if you really wanted to see what these guys have as singles runs.
Last thing I want to ask you guys about the draft. If there's a surprise that's going to happen out there, something that's really unexpected with the rosters, what do you guys, if you guys have any theories, what do you anticipate that we might be in store for?
You know, I don't know that it's a surprise. I think that we kind of joked about it here. I wouldn't be surprised if NXT is in play and we just don't know it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think it's those people that we don't expect from NXT or just anyone from NXT. You know, where they end up landing will always be kind of a surprise. Also, a little bit of fear because we know that what happens when you leave the cocoon, the nest of NXT to the main roster, you know, how characters and individuals don't always – that doesn't necessarily translate well, or it's just, you know, the perception is different or the company decides to go in a slightly different direction with them. So I think it's going to be excitement and also fear, excitement for the opportunity for the individual or individuals. But also the fear of how are they going to mess this up? Cause that's just what we're used to. We're just,
yeah. 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 Would you guys want to see, like, if the rosters, like, say, SmackDown and Raw both start raiding the NXT roster, would you want to see, like, the draft extended to a third night so NXT can say, hey, wait a second, you've taken everybody away from us. Now we want a shot at the draft, too. And they say, okay, you guys make your picks or something like that. But you think there's any chance that we see something like that happen?
I don't think so. I think that it's there's also been a lot of discussion, I think, as far as the presentation of NXT as this third brand. But I think it's always still going to be seen, at least from the perspective of Raw and SmackDown and then the way that they're presented on TV, is this developmental. So I don't think they're going to allow NXT the chance to poach back. You may see more of just those surprise people coming back. But I just don't think that that's a direction they're going to go in.
Fair enough. Well, guys, before I let you go on this episode of the Greg DeMarco Show, absent sans Greg DeMarco, let people know where can they check you guys out on social media or any place that they can, you know, get in touch with you and harass you, which I'm sure people want to do, especially you, Pat, especially you, Patrick.
No, nobody harasses me. I'm still at 443 followers, so I've gained nothing, have lost nothing. I'm sure that'll all change before we know it. But as most people know, that do listen to this show, you can follow me, on Twitter at Wrestling Realist. That's spelled, WrestlingRealist. First try. Look at that. So give me a follow and someday we will actually achieve the dream of hashtag 450.
Yeah, we've like reestablished the goals. It was originally
we just keep lowering the bar. It just keeps going down. Susan's be like, Patrick 446.
And then we're just like, what about 444? Like,
just give him one more.
Says, yeah, let's just give him one more.
One more Twitter bot.
Miranda, where can people get in touch? I know you're not on Twitter, but where can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, I am not on Twitter, but I am on Instagram at the hashtag Miranda, hashtag spelled out. I am also on Facebook as the hashtag Miranda.
There you go. And for people listening, if anybody gives a crap about this, you can reach the Attitude of Aggression on Twitter at Attitude Ag. That is at Attitude AGG. I've got a few more followers than Patrick.
Just
a few thousand more, but that's beside the point. But you can check that out there and on facebook.com/attitudeofaggression. Patrick, Miranda, thank you so much for being a part of this show. And hopefully Greg doesn't fire all of us for this thing. I thought we covered the topics quite well. Thank you guys very much.
Hey, thanks for filling in, man.
Yeah, you were so efficient. Like this is some efficiency. You kept everything like on time. Like we still probably would have been talking about, you know, like
guys, thank you so much. Hopefully Greg enjoys this. Hopefully we can do this again soon.